Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. This episode is number 73, and this is going to be a recording of the message that I preached at the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, dealing with Genesis chapter 37, which is where Joseph is sold by his brothers. It deals with hatred and envy and the consequences of that, the causes of it, that kind of thing. So it should be a good show. Help us understand what's kind of going on sometimes even in our own culture where we have this conflict between the wealthy and those who want to redistribute other people's wealth and the envy and the hatred that's associated with that. I mentioned that, but other things as well helps us to get a good biblical worldview of the whole concept. So should be a good show for you. Before we do that, I want to take care of some introductory information. First of all, make sure that you are a registered user of the website. This enables you to get updates as to when we have made new podcast shows or anything changes on the website. You'll hear about it through automated email, and that way you don't have to keep checking the website every day. You can do that, of course, but it allows you to get on there when you have to, when there's new programs coming out, that kind of thing. So it also enables you to make notes to the show notes or to make comments on the show notes, and I appreciate you doing that. The best way to give me feedback, though, is to email me at steve@thelegacypodcast.com. That comes directly to me. And so if you have questions, you have comments, you have suggestions, any kind of thing that you want to get to me, even recommendations for future shows or recommendations for affiliates, whatever it might be, the best way to do that is steve@thelegacypodcast.com. And then make sure you're also telling us about or telling your friends and family and all and following us on all the various social media, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing, and keeping up to date with where we are and what we're doing there. Sometimes I send out some new things through that, and that's a good way to do that. And then also our affiliate focus for today is U.S. Legal Forms. Now, U.S. Legal Forms, the reason why they're one of our affiliates is because I advocate that people in particular on this podcast that listen to this and want to leave a legacy need to make sure that they have certain legal forms in place. Among those are a will, power of attorney, and advanced medical directive. And you can acquire all of those at U.S. Legal Forms for about $50. And that's for both husband and wife. And it's a great resource there. You put a little bit of energy into it and make sure that it's notarized and you have those documents at your disposal. So U.S. Legal Forms is a great place to get that. Of course, you can get all kinds of other legal forms as well, but that's the main reason why I advocate them as an affiliate, so check them out. The best way to contact our affiliates is through the website. On the center right column, you can identify them and go through there. Of course, when you click on that through the website, then you are able to also help to support the show because I get a little kickback commission on that, so I appreciate you doing that. If the best way you want to support the show is through becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year, and with that you have exclusive access to our members-only site that has vendor discounts and some other downloads, an e-book or two, some charts and that kind of thing. And so you have access to that when you become a Legacy Partner. In addition to that, you are also able to support the show at less than 25 cents an episode. So I encourage you to consider becoming a Legacy Partner. With that, that takes care of the introductory material. So now hopefully you'll be able to gain some benefit by listening to the message that I preached to the people of Mount Tabor Baptist Church this Sunday. Again, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 37. While you're turning there, you know, we have a tendency in our culture to use the word hate or hatred far more than we should. How many times have you been talking to a young child about broccoli and they say, "Oh, I hate broccoli." Right? You've heard that before. Now, all our kids for some reason love broccoli, so we're blessed with that. But I know a lot of kids don't. Or, you know, you have a teenage child or something and you go shopping with them and you say, "Well, about this shirt? Oh, I hate that. I never got that and that," right? And then you have somebody maybe that you're talking football with them and talk about their favorite team. "Oh yeah, I love the Cowboys or the Redskins, the Broncos, or whatever." And you mention a team they don't like. "Oh man, I hate that team." Right? We use that word all the time. In fact, I caught myself using it this morning as we were leaving the house. We have this problem with our cat, one of our youngest cat. Named Prim. It was a replacement of our other cat that got run over. And we replaced it with this one. And it was a little tiny cat when we got it. And that was a danger because it got let in the house.
Now, they're supposed to be outside barn cats and, you know, hunting cats and, you know, that kind of thing. And so they're supposed to be outside. But once she got a taste of inside, now she feels she can come inside anytime she wants. So it's a very frustrating ordeal. But every time you open the door, in darts the cat. So I'm leaving the house this morning, trying to get everybody here. And of course, if you're here at 10 o'clock, you realize that it's a real challenge for my family to get here at 10 o'clock. So, you know, we're leaving the house and I'm frustrated because we're already late and trying to get everybody going, you know. And I open the door and what happens? In darts the cat. Well, you know what I say? I hate that cat. Get that stupid cat out of the house. Right? We use that word all the time, and yet I don't really hate the cat. Now, she frustrates me to no end, no question about that. But I don't really hate the cat. But we use that word, I think, sometimes to the extreme to where it loses its real punch. And hatred is something that can be so destructive. We're going to see in this passage an example of that kind of true hatred. We're going to look at the causes for hatred, the actions of hatred, the consequences of hatred, and then we're going to bring it all together with some principles for us to follow. So first of all, let's look at the causes of hatred. And we see the first one in verses 1 and 2, and that is the tattling of Joseph. In verses 1 and 2, what we find is that Jacob is dwelling in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is an indication that they had not yet taken possession of the land that God had promised to them. They were still dwelling there as tent makers and tent dwellers, and they really hadn't established their homeland there. Under the reign of Solomon and David and things like that, they actually make it their home. But at this point, they're just still kind of tent makers. They have to spend 400 years down in Egypt, as we'll get to later. And so this is the idea of that. Verse 2 then says, this is the history of Jacob, Joseph being 17 years old. So this is 11 years since the time that they moved up there. So they've been dwelling there for 11 years. Joseph is now 17. And he was feeding his flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, the sons of Zilpah. And these were Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. If you recall, now I didn't cover all of this, but you're probably familiar that Jacob had 12 sons, the sons of Israel. And he had them by four different wives. Two of those were actual wives, and two of them were handmaids of the wives. And of course, as we might figure with Jacob, he loved one of the wives better than the rest. And he had kind of a level of love for each of his wives, or each of his the mothers of his children. And so he was with the two handmaids' children at this point. And it seems to be that he was probably given some responsibility by his father to kind of oversee some of these affairs. And so he brings back a report, it says in verse 2, that Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now, we don't know whether his dad asked him, say, hey, you go out there and work with these boys and see how they do at tending the sheep, and you come back and report to me how they do. Whether that was the case or whether he was just out there and his job was to be with them and shepherding them, and he comes back and tattles on. I don't know what it was, but in either case, he comes back and he tattles on his brothers. Now, those of you who grew up in a household with brothers or sisters, or you have had children, you know this goes on all the time. You don't have to spend very long at our house until you hear, Mama, Abram did this, or Timothy did this, or Mama did, or Mary did this, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's always somebody tattling on somebody else. And it's very frustrating when that happens. And usually when there's that tattling going on, it makes the person that's being tattled on a little bit angry. And so this is the first indication of this anger arising between the brothers, and that is when he brings a bad report about them. And then verses 3 and 4, we see that there's also favoritism involved that brings about this hatred. It says in verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children. Now, we know that this was a problem in that line, wasn't it? Remember, Jacob was the loved the loved son of the mother, and Jacob was the, and then, you know, Isaac was the favored son of Abraham, and so it seems like it's a genealogy that's continuing to carry on this line. So Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children because he was the son of his old age. He was also the first son of his most loved wife, which was Rachel. Also, we made him a tunic of many colors. Verse 4, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably with him. So obviously this favoritism was touched to the extent that Joseph got all kinds of special favors. Not only did he receive this tunic of many colors and, you know, probably the best seat in the house, he received, you know, all the different special favors. He got the best assignments, the best chores. He got everything designed to demonstrate that he was the favored child. As you might imagine, this would cause some disruption, to say the least, among his brothers. And so what does it say? It says that they hated him because of his favoritism. So much so that they couldn't even speak peaceably with him. Everything they said about him and to him was something of disregard and hatred. And then, to make matters even worse, not only do we have this favoritism, not only do we have this bad report and the tattling that Joseph does, but we also see that he has these dreams. And in these dreams, he describes what God is going to do in the future. So verse 5, it says, now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more because of this dream. And so he said, I had this dream. Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. Verse 7, therefore we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. Now the sheaves, of course, are representative of each of the children. So his sheaf stands upright, and it says that all the other sheaves, these sheaves of wheat, they fall down and bow down to the one sheaf that's standing. Well, obviously, the idea behind that, and they get the idea very clearly, is that Joseph is going to be honored, and they're all going to have to bend the knee before him. And of course, bowing before someone is a sign of homage, is a sign of showing honor and respect. And so, look, they're saying, we're not going to bow down to our younger brother. Why should we do that? It's in verse 8, and his brother said to him, shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us? It's almost as though they were threatening him, saying, we're going to make sure that thing doesn't happen. So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. But he didn't just have one dream. He had another dream. Verse 9, then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, look, I have dreamed another dream. Now, I'm going to cover this a little bit more, but you would think Joseph would learn his lesson. Don't you? I mean, here he's already hated by his brothers. He's told them this dream already about the sheaves, and they hated him for it. And so the next dream that he has, even if you were to have that dream, you'd think to yourself, you know what, I think I'll just keep this one to myself. But not Joseph. Joseph says, ha, I got another dream. I'm going to go share it with my brothers. So Joseph is not all innocent in this matter, you can tell. So verse 9, he goes and tells it to them, and he says, this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down. Well, you can kind of get the picture here. The sun, of course, is the father, the moon's the mother, and the 11 stars are his siblings. So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come and bow down each before you? And yet we know that he kind of holds that and treasures that into his heart and remembers that later, thinking, well, maybe that would be cool. My son has that kind of power and kind of ability. He's hoping that it might be the case. But it says in verse 11, but his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So those are the causes. We see that he tattled, he was arrogant, prideful, these kinds of things, and reporting to his brothers. And he had these dreams that were showing superiority over his brothers, and favoritism of his father. All of those things are seeding this embedded hatred into the family against him. And so what happens? Well, that hatred is expressed in verses 12 through 27. Verse 12, Joseph is at home and his brothers are away shepherding the sheep with or in Shechem, his father's sheep. Verse 12, verse 13, and Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flocks in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to him, here I am. Then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with your flocks and bring back word to me. So this kind of indicates that maybe that's what his job was earlier when he did that with his other four brothers. Maybe his job was to stay with dad, kind of learn from dad, and then periodically go out and see his brothers out in the field, give a report and come back. And as you might imagine, the anytime you have had somebody who is younger than you, over you, there's already some problem there. And so that was seen to be the case here, that he was the second youngest of the brothers, and yet he would go out and kind of be a supervisor to his brothers, bring back report. Verse 15, now a certain man was found in there and wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? He says, I'm seeking my brothers. They've come here to feed their flocks. And the man says, well, they've gone on to Dothan. Now Shechem was about 50 miles from Hebron, which is where they were. And then 15 miles past that was Dothan. And so it was probably a 4-day trip in total to get up to where his brothers were feeding their flock. And so he gets up there, it says in verse 18, now when he was far off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They already had that in their heart. Because of all the anger that had built up and all of the envy and the hatred that was swelling up within them as a result of what took place earlier, they already had that in them. So when they saw him coming, that was triggered and they said, hey, you know what? Here comes that dreamer of dreams. Let's kill him. Then we'll see what happens to those dreams. So verse 21. But Reuben heard it and delivered him out of the hands and said to him, let us not kill him. Now Reuben was the firstborn of all the children. He was the oldest. And so he probably felt somewhat of a responsibility to take care of the rest of the children. And but I think that there was a little bit of motivation there of some responsibility. Those of you who are firstborn know that you kind of feel responsible kind of for the rest of your family. But so he was acting somewhat out of charity for his brother and somewhat out of charity for his father. But I think that there was also something else to it. And that was he was skipped over as the heir to the throne the father because of what he did in chapter 25 by sleeping with one of his father's concubines. And so he was dismissed as an heir. And as a result of that, he was probably thinking to himself, you know what? If my brothers try to kill him, but I save his life, I know my father loves Joseph very much. If I bring Joseph back and explain what happened, he might restore me. And so I'm thinking that there's probably some ulterior motives to what Reuben is thinking here at this point. So verse 22, and Reuben said to them, shed no blood, but cast him into a pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him. And this is that he might deliver him out of their hand. So he has a hope to go back and deliver Joseph and bring him to his father. Verse 23, so it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. They took him and cast him into the pit. The pit was empty and there was no water in it. Otherwise he would have died. Verse 25, and they sat down to eat a meal. Now this just shows the callousness of his brothers, the extent of their hatred, that they could take their brother with the intent of killing him, put him into this pit, leaving him there, taking the tunic and put some animal blood on it so that it shows that it's going to, that it was a wild animal that took the child out or something like that. They have all this plan. They put the child into the pit, their brother into the pit. And then what do? They eat some food. They sit down and eat a meal together. That just shows the callousness of their heart. So verse 25, and they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down to Egypt. Now the Ishmaelites were the descendants of Abraham through his handmaid Hagar. And so This was long-lost cousins of the Israelites, so to speak. And they had kind of intermarried with some other ones, the Midianites and the Midians. But they were a nomadic people, a trading people, and they would go back and forth regularly through that area on the way to Egypt with spices and all of these things. And so they have this caravan coming through. They see these Ishmaelites, and they get this great idea. Judah, by the way, is the fourth son. And he was actually probably vying in place for the next in line. If you remember, Reuben was out now because of what he did with the concubine. The two next in line had committed all kinds of crimes in Shechem, a bunch of murder and things like that. So they were kind of out of the line. So that would leave Judah as the next in line. And so Judah's probably thinking to himself, you know what? Joseph's out of the picture. Reuben's already out. My two older brothers are already out. That would leave me. So what does Judah say? Judah said to the brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brothers and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh." And his brothers listened. So his idea is, let's say, let's profit off this. Let's just not kill him. Then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers put Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. 20 shekels of silver, we read another place in the scripture, was the price for redemption of a male child. And we know later on that Jesus was sold for 30 pieces of silver. And so this was not a very large amount. And yet they were willing to sell their brother for that amount. So then it says in verse 39, if you want to skip up to there, 36, I'm sorry, that it records what happened to Joseph once he was sold. He was taken down to Egypt, and he was purchased by Potiphar, who is the officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard. And we'll pick up with Joseph and his situation a little bit later. But what are the consequences of this hatred? So we see him being sold into slavery. Of course, that would be one consequence, that his brother is departed from the family. They're no longer be able to see him. But there's some other consequences. We see that the report gets back to Jacob of what has happened. It says in verse 29, "Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit." So he apparently wasn't there when they were selling him. Maybe he had taken a group of the sheep and taken them off and gone somewhere else. So he was not aware of what happened when they sold him. So he comes back. He's mourning over what had taken place. Verse 31, "So they took Joseph's tunic, killed the goat, dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, 'We have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not?'" So their plan was to cover up his selling, thinking that he had died. And he recognized it and said, "It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured it. Without a doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." So their plan works, right? Everything seems to be going good for the brothers. They get rid of Joseph, the one that was favored. But look at the consequences of what happened to the father. "Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, mourned for his son many days. All of his sons and all of his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, 'For I shall go down into the grave of my son in mourning.' Thus my father wept before him." Any of you who have lost a child or a son or daughter before you passed away, usually it's supposed to be the parents passing away before the children. Any of you who have lost a child know the devastation that can take place with that. And the thought of losing a child is just excruciating. And here Jacob comes to the grips that he might have lost this child and mourns over his death. So verse 34 or 35, his father wept for him. This is one of those understatements. I can only imagine the depths of Jacob's sorrow over losing his son. So that's the consequences of hatred. So what then are some principles that this passage brings to us? Well, first of all, we must not repay evil with evil. We must not repay evil with evil. Was it right for Jacob to strut around with his robe on and to talk about his dreams and talk about how great he's going to be and how his brothers are going to bow down to him? Was that good? That wasn't good. Was it good for the father to show special favoritism towards Jacob or towards Joseph and to, you know, give him this special robe and to give him the best assignments and to treat him differently than his brothers? No. But does any of that justify what the brothers did? No. You see, it's never right to continue to do wrong when you've been wronged. You've probably heard it say, well, you can't stoop to someone else's level. No, we need to make sure that we remain higher than what has been done to us. Romans chapter 12, verse 17 says, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. Two wrongs never make a right. Now, children have a difficulty with this. I've had to deal with this from time to time, and it seems like it's a continuous struggle with children as they learn they can't repay evil with evil. So, you know, Timothy or Mary may take one of Timothy's toys or something, and then sooner or not, what will happen? Timothy ends up hitting Mary or something. And then we have to explain to him that it's, you know, you can't hit your sister just because she takes something. That's not the right way to do it. And yet that's within us. That's our human nature, to repay evil with evil. But it's not the way that God designs us to do. Instead, we must be willing to endure evil and to continue to do good despite it. Adults even have trouble with this. I remember one of the churches I pastored, there was a feud between one person and another person. And it went on for a long time. And the only reason for that is because way back when, one person hurt the other person. And ever since then, they've continued to try to, you know, fight and get on different committees and you know, fight against each other from the various positions. And of course, there's no reason with that, no reason for that. If you've been hurt or treated wrongfully, we cannot stoop to someone else's level and do evil. The rest of Romans 12 that I read earlier, beginning in verse 18, says this: if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. See, I think that's one of the principles that we can learn from this passage. The brothers should have overcome evil with good. They should have lavished on Joseph as much love as their father was giving to him. Yes, it was not fair. Yes, it was wrong for Jacob to do what he did by showing favoritism. But they should have been able to rise above that and to love rather than to hate. The second principle that we see in this passage is that the sins of the father are often passed on to the children. Notice the generational sin of favoritism. I already mentioned it, how you know, Abraham loved Isaac more than he loved Ishmael. And then Isaac loved Jacob more than he loved Esau. And now Jacob is loving Joseph more than all the rest of the children. And so it seems as though this sin was passing on from one generation to the next. Notice the generational deceit that took place. Remember, Jacob was named deceiver, a heel grasper, usurper. That was his name, Jacob. And now what do we find his children doing? We see his children deceiving him, lying to him, covering things up, scheming against him. You see, the sins are passed on from one generation to the next. Exodus chapter 34, verse 6 says, and the Lord passed before them and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, and abounding in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgressions and sin, by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. Now, I do not believe in generational curses. There's teachings out there, people saying that there's generational curses and things like that. I don't believe in that. I don't think the Bible teaches that. But I do believe this: the apple doesn't far fall from the tree. I do believe that very often what is exemplified in the home is then translated to the children, and the children end up doing the same thing. How many times have you experienced this yourself growing up? You've seen something ugly in your parents and you said, I'm never going to do that. And then you get to be their age and their situation. What do? The exact same thing you said, I'm never going to do. Why? Because we follow the patterns of those that we are around the most. And so it was only natural for Jacob's children, who saw him trick Laban and saw him trick his father and saw him do all these different kinds of things, for them just naturally think, well, what are we to do in this situation? Oh, we'll just trick our father. That's what we've learned how to do. And so the sins of the father often are passed on to the children. Like father, like son, for that expression. Chip off the old block. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Why are those expressions so true? Why are they so common? Because they're expressions of reality in so many ways. How many of you have seen outbursts of anger in your home? And you grow up and you say, I'm going to control my anger. And then the kids do something wrong. What do? You have an outburst of anger, right? How many alcoholic fathers have alcoholic children? Is that a generational curse? I don't believe so. I think it's just following the patterns of what you've been taught. And so here the children of Jacob are following his patterns. It doesn't have to be this way, though. We can change that. We can make a change of direction in our family. And so fathers, I want to encourage you, grandfathers, I want to encourage you, stamp out sin now. Stamp out sin so that your children are not seeing the patterns of sin in your life. And then children, be generational changers. You see something in your parents you didn't like, ask God to change that in you so that you will not pass it on then to your children. The third principle is the natural conclusion of envy is hatred and murder. The natural conclusion of envy and hatred is murder. You know, hatred is really murder in the heart. So Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, verse 21, it says, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Ephesians 4:26 says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. And then 1 John 2:9 says, he who says he is in the light and hates his brother is in darkness even till now. 1 John 3:15 says, whoever hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. 1 John 4:20 says, if anyone says, I love God and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God must love his brother also. I think it's really interesting if you look at the word envy in Greek and Hebrew, word pictures arise from that. And the actual word for Hebrew for envy is a word that means to bring a red face. And, you know, when you are envious of something or somebody, your natural reaction is to get angry. And when you get angry, what happens? You get a red face. And so the picture even of the word itself carries this idea of anger and hatred. Now, there are some misunderstandings as to the difference between envy and jealousy. And sometimes we use those words synonymously. And there is a difference between them. Jealousy is looking at somebody else's thing or somebody else's life and they say, well, that would be great to have that kind of life. I wish I had that kind of life. That's jealousy. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Envy, on the other hand, is looking at somebody else's life or somebody else's stuff and saying, I wish I would have that, and because I can't have that, I don't want them to have it either. You see the difference? And so in the situation here with Jacob and his children, they were looking at their brother and they weren't saying, oh, you know what? That's really great that he's got that special robe, that he's got those dreams. I wish I had those. They're not saying that. They're saying, he's got those dreams, he's got that robe, and we don't have that. And because we don't have that, we don't want him to have it either. So we're going to kill him. You see, that's envy risen to its ultimate conclusion. Now, unfortunately, we live in a society that fosters envy. Even if you listen to political speeches on the television or the radio or something like that, what do we hear? Well, the rich have to pay their fair share. It's the top 1%. They're just not paying enough. Well, that's envy. Isn't it envy? It's not, great, look at them. We live in a free country. Let's go do it too. It's, look at them. They're wealthy. They're rich. They're the 1%. We can't have that. So let's take it from them and give it to these ones over here. That's envy. We foster that in our culture. We foster that in our lives. And the ultimate conclusion of that is hatred. And so what do we have? We have people picketing, getting angry. How can these people get that kind of money? That can't be. We must guard our hearts against that kind of envy, because that kind of envy leads to hatred and will eventually lead to murder. We must consider our own hearts, see if there is some kind of envy in us. And then number four, pride leads to the eventual fall. Pride leads to the eventual fall. I've mentioned it already, but I can't help but think that Joseph was partly at fault in this whole deal. Why was it that he had to strut around in his robe? No doubt, anytime there was company over, this is kind of how I pictured it, okay? Anytime there was company over, all the brothers come out, parading out, right? And what does he come out? Parading out in his new, nice robe, right? Obviously showing everybody, yeah, I'm the special one in this household. And then I already mentioned how he gets these dreams, right? Now, it's one thing to get the dream and to say it one time. But then he gets another dream that says the same thing, basically. He should have learned his lesson. He should have said, I'm not saying this one. I'm just keeping this one to myself. But what does he do instead? He says, hey, brothers, I got another dream. Right? He taunts them. Prideful arrogance. And what happens as a result? Fall. Now, we'll cover this a little bit later as we look at the rest of Joseph's life. But he learned to be humble through that fall. While he was in prison and serving all kinds of difficult situations, the Lord worked out that pride in his life so that he was able to, in the end, have some humility. Proverbs 16:16 says, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. I don't know if you can look into your own life and see times where you were haughty of spirit, where you were prideful, and it ended in a fall. Sadly, I can look at a lot of mine. And my kids know this story already. They mention it regularly, unfortunately. But when I was a freshman in college, I was outside of Tucson, Arizona, riding a bike with a girl that, she was all right. But she wasn't, she was a girl, I was a boy, right? So I was trying to impress her, right? And we're out riding a bike. I said, hey, watch this. Famous last words, right? So I get off the road, go down into the sand, because it's off-road, right? And I start riding my bike, doing some, cool stuff, right? Well, it wasn't too long, and my front tire dug into the sand, and I went flying over the front end. Landed, ended up breaking my wrist, breaking my thumb, scarring up my face. I had skin off on my legs, and it was a disaster. And all because I said, hey, watch this. Pride comes before the fall. I could go on and on talking about all the different things. I fell one time on a bike because I was on a jump, and I had a friend of mine next to me. And, we had little BMX-type bikes, growing up, and we had made this little jump in our yard and on the roadway there. And I was trying to impress, right? hey, watch this. Wipe out, right? Famous last words. I should have known. As soon as I say, hey, watch this, destruction's coming. Well, I think that's what Joseph was doing too. Hey, look at me. And what happens? Destruction. We need to guard against pride in our own lives. We must put away that pride. You know, it's the work of the devil. What was it that caused the enemy? What was it that caused the devil to be taken out of heaven? It was his pride. What was it that caused Adam and Eve to be kicked out of the garden? It was her desire to be like God. And so we must guard against that kind of pride. If you're in a privileged situation, if you've got all kinds of stuff, if you are in a situation that is can make others jealous, don't take that as something that you've done. Know that it is by God's grace that you have what you have. It's only a gift of God that we even have our next breath, much less the possessions and things that we have. So hatred is an incredibly destructive device. Hatred is what ultimately put Jesus Christ on the cross. If you fast forward 2,000 years, 3,000 years from here, or from this event, there was a group of Jews got together, and because of envy of Jesus' miracles and the crowd that he was gathering, the teachings that he was doing, what they decide to do? Well, if we can't have that, we don't want him to have it either. Let's kill him. They put him on the cross and killed him. And you know, if the situation with Joseph stopped at this passage, we think it was all for naught. And if when Jesus was put on the cross, out of the envy and hatred of the Jews, and the story ended there, we would think it would be all for naught. But the good news is, it doesn't end there in either case. God used both of those events. He used the hatred, he used the envy, he used the destructive nature of all of these things to bring about his glory and his grace. And he brought about the redemption of his people in both cases as a result. So God is at work, and he is always faithful to bring about his will, even in the midst of destruction. Let us pray.
And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?